This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association at cga-manitoba.org. Certified General Accountants, we see more than numbers.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Windsor Star, Bob Duff. Bob, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, always my pleasure, guys.
Bob, prior to the Red Wings beating the Carolina Hurricanes on Thursday, the Wings had lost seven in a row, albeit, put a caveat on it, they had still earned points in five of those seven losses. Is that losing streak just a blip thanks to the random nature of shootout and overtime, or a sign of something more concerning?
Well, I think it's a sign of something more concerning, and they hope they solved the problem in their win over Carolina when they brought Gustav Nyquist up from the minors and he scored a pair of goals, because the bottom line is they just had no scoring depth. He got beyond Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk, and it was a desert in terms of scoring. There's just no consistent scoring from any of their other three lines, and so basically you're a one-line hockey team, and that's not going to succeed very often in the NHL.
Bob, the injury to Danny DeKeyser, how does that affect the back end?
Well, it affects it immensely. And in fact, when they had some earlier injuries in the season, they had DeKeyser up in the top pair with Nick Cronwall. So that's the kind of trust he's already earned with this coaching staff. The kid is just an anomaly, a guy that walked in here. You know, the rule of thumb with NHL defensemen is it takes them approximately 200 games to really figure out and get a handle on the league. This kid walked in and it was almost seamless. I think Nick Cronwall himself put it best. He said, you shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Bob, sticking with the defense, we've heard out of Detroit that there's been some talk that Jonathan Erickson, even though he's had some injury problems this year, he's about to sign a long-term contract extension with the Red Wings. Are you able to provide our listeners with any update on those contract talks? And as far as Jonathan Erickson goes, why is it that Ken Holland wants to sign him to that long-term contract? Why does he think he's so valuable to this defense corps?
Well, he's very steady. He's not the guy you kind of notice a whole lot. He's not really productive offensively, but he's a big body on a team that doesn't have a lot of big physical defensemen. He's certainly probably a little more valuable than he might be in other cities, but I think he often gets overlooked. He just is such a steady presence back there. He's nothing flashy about him, nothing spectacular, but he gets better and better every year. And Ken Holland would only say that they're still talking when I talk to him about the contract situation, but the rumor's been a 4 or 5 year deal in the $4 million range, and that's quite a reasonable contract when you think about what veteran defensemen are getting these days. So I think that's another reason why they'd be looking to lock him up long term, is they're going to get him at a pretty good rate.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Bob Duff of the Windsor Star talking about the Detroit Red Wings. Bob, if you look at the Red Wings roster, I mean, anytime you talk about the Red Wings, you start with Datsyuk and Zetterberg, and they're certainly pulling their weight so far this season. Zetterberg, 26 points in 23 games. Datsyuk, 22 points in 23 games. But after those two, there's just a significant drop-off, and you mentioned this earlier, there's just been no secondary scoring. How much of a concern do the Wings have with their lack of secondary scoring so far this season?
Well, they're very concerned about it, and of course the added dilemma right now is that both Steven Weiss and Daniel Alfredsson, their two off-season free agent additions who were supposed to provide that secondary scoring, are out of the lineup with groin injuries, and it's going to be at least another week before either of them are back. So you take those two out, and that's an even more significant hit to your ability to score. And then there's the mercurial Johan Franzen, who's scored four goals this season with a pair of two-goal games. So, I mean, it's been all or nothing from him, and sadly, it's mostly been nothing.
You know, in terms of Gustav Nyquist, Bob, you mentioned him earlier. Now the Wings are in a bit of a bind in that they, I think they can play one more game, and then he has to clear waivers to go back to Grand Rapids. How are they going to – I mean, they're going to keep him up, and he's going to be playing. Is that one of the keys they have for that secondary scoring? And what's going to happen once those injured players come back?
Well, Ken Holland confirmed yesterday that no matter what, Gustav Nyquist is here to stay. They're not worried about the waiver situation. Ken Holland said he'll deal with that when the time comes and with the cap issues, and it probably means another veteran player is going to be put on waivers. I mean, they've already cast three veterans adrift this year, Corey Emerton, Patrick Eves, and Jordan Tutu, and all three of them are now in Grand Rapids because nobody claimed them. And I would think somebody like Dan Cleary might be in jeopardy of a waiver trip when things get healthy. Certainly they've got, you know, DeKaiser's 3 to 6 weeks, so it's probably going to be a while before they have to make a serious roster decision. But still, I would think those are the guys that a guy like Cleary. I wouldn't think Bertuzzi would be in jeopardy because he does have size, and they are a team that doesn't have a lot of big forwards. So I would think the guy that with the bullseye on him right now would be Dan Cleary.
You know, obviously it's a luxury for a team to have this many options, Bob. How does it affect the locker room? Is there a little bit more uncertainty or unease than there's been in years past?
No, I think it's been more of a healthy competition. You know, you guys know they've got to play well to stay in the lineup, and you know, it's a veteran team, and they understand that this is how it works, and if you don't produce, you don't play. And Mike Babcock's always been pretty clear on that. He said the best players are going to play, and he said before the game the other night, he said Nyquist's job here tonight is to make sure we can't send him back, and he went out and scored two goals and did exactly what the team felt he needed to do.
Bob, you mentioned the additions that the Detroit Red Wings made in the summer, and everybody knows it was the biggest addition as far as him leaving a team that he was with for so long, and Daniel Alfredson, he came over. And how has his first season been, not just on the ice, but how has his reception been? How is he liking Detroit? How is he acclimatizing himself to Detroit?
I think in terms of his reception, it's been outstanding. Certainly the Swedish players among the Red Wings revere him as the kind of the godfather of Swedish NHLers. And I remember talking to Henrik Zetterberg in training camp, and he said that was the one Swede I never thought I'd get to play on the same team with, because he said I couldn't see any way he'd ever leave Ottawa. So Zetterberg is just delighted to get to play with Alfredson, and I think they're hoping he'll have kind of an impact on some of the younger Swedish players the same way that Larionov and Fetisov kind of took the young Russian players under their wing when they were here in the 90s. And just because he has that kind of gravitas with Swedish players, that they look up to him with such reverence that they don't want to disappoint him. And I think certainly Franzen's one guy that they are hoping Alfredson will have a positive impact on.
Bob, that, by the way, that's how we look up to Drew with reverence. That's in Legal Curve. He's the guy we look up to.
Something like that. And Bob, we talked about offseason acquisitions and just mentioned Alfredson, of course. Steven Weiss, there's been injuries and such there. But letting Filppula go to Tampa Bay, Weiss was brought in, and the expectations were pretty high. And the contract to many was quite reasonable, considering he's a UFA, and there aren't many of those anymore with a lot of offensive talent. Why, when playing, why has he struggled so much?
I think, you know, you got to remember he missed almost the entire season last year with a knee injury, and I think it's taken him a while just to get back into the groove. And then just when it looked like he was starting to be his old self, he suffered this groin injury, and now he's been out for a couple weeks. So he just hasn't had a lot of luck. He'll be the first to admit he hasn't played as well as he'd like, and I think that's a big issue in the secondary scoring, because they need that, as you say, Filppula's gone, and they needed Weiss to come in and be that center to trigger the second line, and it just hasn't clicked so far, and they're hoping it's because of the rust on his game from not playing a lot last year, but I guess time will tell once he gets back. Now, I think with Filppula, they knew he was going to have a good regular season, but the big issue with him was always the playoffs. He was a guy that in the last three playoff years, they only scored a combined 3 goals, and he just wasn't bringing it in the big games, and I think that's why the Red Wings couldn't fathom giving him the kind of money that Tampa Bay did.
Bob, we'll let you go on this last question. With the Winter Classic approaching, and we know the HBO cameras are on their way to Detroit any day now probably, and the Olympics, you know, not too far off there in February, and head coach, of course, Mike Babcock, going to be the head coach for Team Canada, in addition to a number of Olympians on the Red Wings roster. Is there any concern that there are too many distractions surrounding the Red Wings this season, and that may explain their average play so far?
Not really, because none of it's started yet. I mean, HBO's not going to be here until a couple weeks from now, so there really haven't been an issue with them at all. And the Olympics is something no one really even talks about at this point, so I don't think that's been an issue yet. It could become one, but at this point I would say no, it hasn't been.
Bob Duff from the Windsor Star talking about the Detroit Red Wings. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You guys always know where to find me.
Take care, Bob. Thanks very much.
All right.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Bob Duff from the Windsor Star for having joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, in case you missed any of the interview with Robin Short, where we talked about the St. John's Ice Caps, they'll both be available for download on iTunes. You can also subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Get all of our audio sent to you each and every day. And, of course, you can also download everything off the TSN1290.ca website. We're going to finish off going through the last couple teams, evaluating their forward groups versus the Winnipeg Jets forward group. I believe we left off with we said the St. Louis Blues, but we all, I think, are unanimous. That's doesn't need much discussion there. We take the Blues over the Jets right now. Next up is the Tampa Bay Lightning. Again, they're definitely top-heavy. But their presence of Jonathan Drouin, not in the lineup, that's but as a prospect there, might, you know.
And if you've been following him this year back in junior, apparently he's been dynamite.
I saw a stat earlier, something like, let's see if I can find it.
Yes, he has some points.
Yeah, so I mean, with Drouin and Stamkos, I mean, I just think that you're taking those two over, you know, most two going forward.
Yeah, Rich,
in an NHL team.
And the second line, Philpula has done better than I thought he was going to do. He's a guy that Detroit didn't have a problem with letting go, right? And Teddy Purcell is a good guy, speaking of the Maritimes. Tyler Johnson there, Brett Connolly. I'd probably take the Lightning.
Yep. You were saying earlier, as you want to get to the Maritimes for a vacation. You think maybe Rick will, you know, you can go with Rick. He can show you around.
Yeah, maybe we'll take a ferry along the Atlantic Ocean, or just maybe a paddle boat or something, or maybe we'll just go for a swim, do some body surfing.
Rick's girlfriend won't mind that at all. She won't mind.
Toronto Maple Leafs, I think. Well,
now, you know what? The Toronto Maple Leafs, with the core that they have, and Kadri being a younger player, and Kessel still being a younger player, you're taking the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Drew. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just like, I mean, Kessel
and James Van Riemsdyk. He's
been excellent.
As a quick aside here, Brian Burke gets ripped for a lot of the stuff he did, but that was the old fleecing right there.
Well, and I mean, when that trade came down, it was like, that's it? Just Luke Shen?
The Leafs wanted Van Riemsdyk, and the Flyers wanted Luke Shen, and I think you're going to take Van Riemsdyk. Van Riemsdyk is a guy that he's turning into a superstar. That's how good he is.
I mean, it ended up being a top six forward for a bottom-pairing defenseman right now.
Well he's not a bottom-pairing defenseman. He's a top four defenseman on Philly.
I think this is what
he was a healthy scratch for a couple games.
He's still a top four defenseman.
I don't think that's
an argument. He's been playing in the top four.
I don't think that Van Riemsdyk is a superstar. I think James Van Riemsdyk is turning into a very nice top six player who can put up points. I think Luke Shen is a limited defenseman. He can play in your top four, but he's a limited defenseman in terms of his puck, his offensive ability, and his skating ability. He plays hard, he's physical, he blocks shots, he does all that stuff, but he'll never be able to take the step into a top pairing role because of his inability to move based on the way the NHL game is played now and based on his inability to contribute significantly on the power play.
Vancouver Canucks, and they're a bit of an interesting case. I mean, the Sedins, and the Sedins are still going to be there for at least another 4 years. They just signed that contract extension. Yep. But, I mean, after the Sedins on that roster, and Ryan Kessler when he's healthy.
That's right.
You got a whole lot of blah.
It's still the Vancouver because those guys are in an elite level. But yes, I agree with you, Drew, that they're very top heavy, but it's at an elite level. So especially it's at an elite level, guys, and at an elite level up the middle. Mm-hmm. I know Kessler played some wing, but Sedin and Kessler are very good NHL centers. Young youth, they have an issue with, but so does Winnipeg.
Right, and Yannick Hansen's still a versatile player. They try him on the top line, but he's more suited to second line or even a third line role on that team. And, you know, if you're talking prospects, you've got Bo Horvat, Hunter Shinkaruk. You know, the Jets do have some prospects, too, but those are higher first-round forward picks in the 2013 draft.
Right.
So I still think you're taking Vancouver.
Sure. Next week when we do this exercise and we look at defensemen and we look at prospects.
More interesting.
Jets are certainly going to be – I mean, they've spent – you know, you got Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba. They spent two of their last three first-round picks on defensemen. So that conversation will look a lot – it'll look a lot better on the Winnipeg Jets at that point in time.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's a fair analysis, I think.
I think so, too. Last team is the Washington Capitals. And again, it's just the top end talent that they have with Ovechkin and Backstrom there.
Yeah. I mean, that's it.
Yeah,
you don't need to go further.
The depth teams.
Yeah.
When the Jets might match up with them depth wise, it's the top end guys,
that's exactly the
superstar players that the Jets just don't have yet. They have some, we know what Ladd, Little, and Wheeler are. They're not what you would call world beating superstars.
Right.
So I think at the end of the day, we said that there are six teams in the NHL that the Jets that would trade their forward group for the Jets forward group.
Yep.
So that should sort of give you a decent idea, unless they're going to be a fantastic defensive team, and they're not right now.
Right.
That should give you an idea as to how to sort of fairly evaluate this Winnipeg Jets team.
And I believe two of those teams are in the West.
Yeah, just Nashville and Calgary.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, three. So Nashville, Phoenix. Calgary, and Phoenix.
So three teams.
But Phoenix, like you said, in the analysis. Is much better than the sum of their parts.
And Nashville, over the past few years, has been as well. Over Barry Trotz's tenure. So that gets back to what we were talking about in the first hour. People were sleeping. like one of us was. No. But in reality, and we talked about that, Ezzy. We talked about buying in to the defensive play to be able to give yourself a better chance to win. And they haven't done that yet. And if you don't do that, you don't have the talent, you can't win in the NHL.
Right. You almost have to play that defensive style like Nashville does, like Phoenix sort of used to some extent. They've opened it up a little bit more.
Yeah, but not much more. It's adapting to your personnel, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had Adrian Acoin on Wednesday talking about this, the way Dave Tippett runs his bench. Dave Tippett's bench, every player on that team knows his role.
Right.
Ribeiro's there to score. Hansel's there to check. He'll score a bit, but he's there to check the best team, the center, the best line on the other team. You know, this is a role that you have and you need to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Right. And when you talk about a guy like Mark Scheifele playing on the third line, I think Frolik knows that if he chips in the odd goal, that's fine. But my responsibility is to be more of a defensive forward, a penalty killer. And I think that's a problem on this team. I think you have guys that are not aware of their roles or not able to perform their roles at the level that they need to. And, you know, I think that the Jets know that they have to be better. They know that. They have to be more consistent. They have to be better in their own zone. They have to be better in all three zones. But talk is cheap, right? And we talked about where this team is going right now. One game left on the homestand, and then you're going on the road. Well, if you want to win 5 out of 6 games on the road, you're not going to be able to just play open-style hockey and trade chances. You're going to have to tighten up defensively. You're going to have to play a perfect game. Not a perfect game. I hate saying that, but you're going to have to play your A game. And when Claude Noel says that, I mean, it is the reality, because the Jets are very much Jekyll and Hyde, and we do see one team that is able to tighten up defensively and get good goaltending, and they get good efforts, and we see all that. And then one game, we see a one-line team.
Like you said, Jekyll and Hyde. Before we go to break, got a couple minutes here. You know, I wanted to talk briefly about Anaheim's goaltending problem, which is a problem that every team in the NHL would be envious to have.
For sure.
The Anaheim Ducks have 4 goaltenders, you know, between their NHL and AHL teams that most people would say are NHL caliber goaltenders. We know that they have Victor Fast. He's been playing the majority of the games for them this year.
I mean, Victor Fast in last night gets a shutout.
Yeah.
Gets a shutout last night.
Yeah.
But you have Fast, you have Hiller. I mean, Anderson comes up, you have Gibson. So to your point, Drew, you know, you're looking at a team. Hiller earlier in the day the rumor was that the Nashville Predators were very interested in acquiring him. Mm-hmm. And basically what they're waiting on, guys, was kind of the reports the reports from Nashville, from the results of the MRI on Pekka Rinne to what to do. So Hiller's played the majority of the games this year, Drew.
Sorry, that's I misspoke when I said that.
And Anderson steps in and plays a bunch of games in a row. Now he's back down because of you know, roster limitations.
Sure.
And Fast has only played five games this year. Fast has been the worst of the bunch, but in five games, how do you really tell? Hiller is the most accomplished of the bunch and probably gets you the most in trade. And the question is, if you trade Hillerez, how much of a drop-off is there? And is there one? Are you confident in going with Anderson and Fast? Because this team is good. This team has exceeded expectations, I think, yet again. And at some point, you have to change your expectation level for them, at least as an outsider.
You have to also mention that Hiller is an unrestricted free agent after this
season.
He is,
yes, of course. I should have mentioned that. John Gibson is a guy in the system who will very, very well maybe your goalie of the future. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's in the conversation right now.
No, not just yet.
He's a guy that you know that he could play in the AHL next year and possibly be in the NHL in what, maybe 2 years, let's say?
I mean, because of their depth.
Right.
Yeah.
Other teams probably not
but
that way.
I think you know, Drew mentioned that just to show the overall organizational depth, mm-hmm. and I know you know that, Rich.
Similar to what St. Louis had a couple years ago.
Look at the Islanders. Look at mm-hmm. the Predators. These teams must be thinking, what do I have to give the Ducks to get a Jonas Hiller or Victor Foss? Because I think we agree Frederik Andersen is probably the guy they don't want to move, but maybe they do move him. I mean, for Anaheim. You know, you look at what do they need? Well, they could use with Suré out. I think Suré's not due back for a little while still.
If I'm the Ducks, I put up for sale the guy who's going to get me the most. Because I mean, if it's Hiller or say it's Frederik Andersen.
They just signed Andersen, so you'd think that they don't want to trade a guy that they just signed. But
well, yeah, teams are generally hesitant to do that. Ezzy, I agree. Yeah. But this is my point would be this: if Hiller is a UFA,
yeah,
and I'm in the New York Islanders. Even more than the Nashville Predators, and I went all in on Thomas Vanek. Why would I not go and make a deal for Jonas Hiller?
Right,
because
do you give up maybe a draft pick, like a high draft pick there or something?
They just gave up a first and a second to get Vanek. They're running out of high draft
That's
picks
true.
To give
and
up.
And if you're Anaheim, if you're confident enough in Fast and Anderson as your combo, you're paying less than $4.5 million for two netminders.
The other flip side, and I'll argue this point, is if you're confident that John Gibson, who I know this is still a couple years away, is going to be a top-flight NHL goaltender, and it might be too early to say that, and you know that Anderson himself is already going to be a top-flight NHL goaltender.
When Anderson played, he was very well. I think he's played six games this year in the NHL.
He was very good. He's played seven games. He has a 9.43 save percentage and a 1.66 goals against average.
Hiller or Fast that's getting moved? I think you can agree on that.
Well, I don't know. Why don't you trade Anderson, re-sign Hiller? It depends. I say whichever one's going to get me the most in a trade right now is the one I'm trading.
Right, but I think it goes back to what we were saying. You signed you already had Fast and Hiller, and then you've signed Anderson because he's a really good prospect. Why are you going to trade him?
If I'm the Islanders, I trade for Hiller, and I know Nashville's sniffing around, and that means that's bad because that would mean Rene's out for a long time. And their team depends on Rene. Their team depends on goaltending, and Carter Hutton just isn't the goalie.
Rene has what? He had a staph infection?
Well, he has E. coli infection.
Yeah, so I mean, he had a bacterial infection. Yeah. So to think he's not going to be out for a while, I think would be very optimistic.
But if you're the Islanders, why would you let a guy like that go?
Sure, jump on him before the Predators do. Let's go to break. When we come back, Frank Provenzano from ESPN.com is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets, Minnesota Wild, 2 p.m. start time here on this fine station. Hustler and Lawless at 11 a.m. following us, and Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass. Pre-game power hour comes up at 1 o'clock from Boston Pizza City Place.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from ESPN.com, Frank Provenzano. Frank, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Frank, recently you wrote about the U.S. Olympic team, obviously the Sochi Olympics coming up in February, and you wrote about the important position battles that are going to take place for that team. Where do you think the team has the most competition?
I would say on the U.S. team, the most competition is going to be on defense in terms of, you know, the decision faced with the management group there is who to pick, because you've got Ryan Suter, and then in my mind, it's kind of an open book on who else makes that team.
Do you think, Frank, do you think Dustin Byfuglien, you know, obviously Jets fans here focused, you know, on him a bunch, and he's had a pretty good season, I think, both offensively, especially lately, and even defensively, considering sometimes he gives it back a bit on the back end. Do you think he's a guy who makes that squad on the back end?
When I did my armchair U.S. GM analysis, I had him on my team because he has the ability to be such a game-changing element. Especially on a big ice surface over there and in a short time frame like that, you know, I think the tournament's 12 days, that mm-hmm. I would have him on my team. So I think the chances are pretty good. You know, he can be a risky player, like you say, but, you know, they're probably going to carry eight defensemen, so you'd have him on the team, and then you sort of measure his risk-reward.
Frank, you know, switching over to the Canadian Olympic team, we were talking about the goaltending situation on our Wednesday show, NHL Midweek, and I was saying that, you know, right now it's pretty wide open, and a guy like Josh Harding deserves to be in the conversation. How do you see the Canadian Olympic goaltending situation playing itself out?
It's funny because I was trying to write the same article. I'm doing the Canadian team now for ESPN next week. That's my gratuitous plug. it's really hard to pick the Canadian team. The one area where there is some sort of where maybe the weakest area, relatively speaking, is in net, I kind of would lean towards Mike Smith, and I'll tell you why. My thinking is the Canadian defense is going to be pretty darn good, and it's going to be hard to get the red line on them. So if you dump it in, you just have Mike Smith back there as kind of your third defenseman. And then he just gets it and throws it back up to the forward group. So I would have Smitty in there.
Maybe put him on the point on the power play, too.
Well, Frank, you know, on that point, obviously, you know, he had that the stint in Dallas there. How, to the point of goaltenders playing the puck, there's not going to be the restrictions there are in the NHL. How big of a factor will that be in the tournament?
I think it's going to be a huge factor. Like I say, you know, you have a team like Canada, and it is going to be harder to gain the Canadian blue line with the defense group that they will likely have in their mobility. And if you have to dump it in and you have a goaltender with the puck skills like Mike Smith, it's just coming right back out again. And it's going to be harder to maintain a forecheck. Now, the downside is you might just see a lot of neutral ice play right in the tournament. But I think it's going to be a big factor.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Frank Provenzano. He currently is an ESPN insider for ESPN.com. Now, Frank, before your stint at ESPN.com, obviously you were an assistant general manager in the NHL, most recently with the Dallas Stars. We want to shift away from the Olympics and talk about the front office world in the NHL. There's been a couple of mid-season coaching changes so far this season. Obviously, Philadelphia, Buffalo, very recently as well. You know, what goes on in such a decision, and you know, how does the process, and when does the process to replace an existing head coach really begin?
You know, if you look at the NHL, we replace coaches in season more than any other league, at least North American Pro League, the major ones. And typically November is a month where it's kind of a shipwreck graveyard for coaches, because if you have a bad start to the season by the quarter mark, you can be out of it before you know, for the rest of the way. I think there was a stat, Elliot Friedman had a stat, that I think since 05-06, by November 1st, if a team is more than 4 points out of a playoff spot, only three teams mm-hmm. have made up that difference. And a lot of that is because of the shootout point and the overtime point. So in a league who's largely, most of the revenues of most teams are come from the gate. We don't have the big TV dollars that the other leagues have. If you're going to save your season the easiest and first move you make is often changing the coach, because it's what you can do, and it carries with it a bit of an implied threat to the rest of the players that more changes are coming.
Frank, in Buffalo, they recently released Darcy Regier, and they announced that Pat LaFontaine was coming in as president of hockey ops. And, you know, the thinking is that they're going to do a pretty extensive search for the next GM. And being a former assistant GM yourself, you know what types of things are asked of potential GMs, prospective GMs, I should say, in interviews. So what types of things are being asked when a guy like Pat LaFontaine is interviewing, you know, maybe a guy like Jason Botterill or other guys who are candidates for that GM job?
Well, I'm guessing, you know, that they're going to ask whoever's going in there, whoever goes into a team, what is your vision for the team? Usually when you're going in to interview for a GM job, it's because you've ran aground as an organization, and there's obviously a bit of a mess there that you have to clean up. And so, you know, when they decide to go for a change in direction, they want to know what your view of the team is. Your view of a philosophy on how you're going to fix it, your vision for how you want the team to play and the types of players that you want to bring in. You know, I've never had the opportunity to sit in one of those interviews. So, Pat, if you're listening, I'm available.
That's what I was trying to do, Frank. I was trying to, you know.
Yeah, it's very nice of you.
Yeah, I told Pat LaFontaine to listen because we were having you on, so.
But generally, generally speaking, they want to know, because you're at the helm. My feeling is the general manager sets sort of the culture of the team season over season. The coach sets the team identity in terms of how they're going to play every night. But the general manager sets the culture of the organization in terms of how they're going to, what type, who they are, both on the ice, off the ice, and in terms of the type of not only players he brings in, but staff that he brings in. And those, I think, are the type of questions that you're going to ask a prospective GM when he comes in there. I mean, Buffalo is obviously a proud franchise, and they have an owner that's very passionate about the Buffalo Sabres, and I'm guessing they want to bring in someone who's going to be as passionate about the Sabres as he is.
It's interesting, Serge. You know, in terms of GM responsibilities, Frank, moving a little bit within that the GM's office, but not in terms of an interview. There's a lot made about, you know, the entry level contract and exceeding the 10 game limit, and of course that burns a year of a player's contract. There's also that rule that the 10 games burns a year of your entry level deal, but playing, I think, in excess of 41 games burns a year of your contract towards your unrestricted free agent status. How much of a factor is that in the decision-making of an NHL front office?
Well, it's certainly a factor because, you know, whenever you burn a year, what you're really burning is some form of a team's rights or a player's rights, and then the leverage that comes with it. So you have to consider that. Typically young players come in and they do really well in training camp, but, you know, if most veteran players are going to be honest, they're just trying to get through training camp without, you know, it's something to be endured and not enjoyed for the most part. So, you know, young players and players that are on the fringe of making the team are the ones that usually stand out in training camp because they're trying the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
And as the season gets underway, I sort of found over the years that your young players, the rest of the league sort of comes back to the older veteran players, and the young players have trouble maintaining their performance level because they're young players.
Right.
And they've never been through the grind of an 82-game season. And it takes some experience, generally speaking, to get through that. And if you look at, I think if you look at 18-year-old players since 05-06 that have played in the league, you're burning a year of, usually it's an elite player, say, for a forward. You're usually burning a year of kind of third, fourth-line performance.
Right.
So you have to weigh, are you giving up a year when he's 26 that he could be a free agent, that he's going to be getting 80 points
right.
for an 18-year-old 40-point year?
You know, and on that point, we had Jay Feaster on last week, Frank, and we asked him this question. You know, it seems like these players come through the CHL, for example, and they're too good to be sent back to the CHL, but they're not good enough to play in the NHL. And we kind of asked Jay, should the AHL and should there be a discussion with the NHL in terms of lessening, getting rid of the age 20 rule being that you can't play in the AHL if you can play in the CHL? And he said, you know, he agreed leaning towards agreeing with that thesis, but really that idea and that discussion at the meetings never really gets any traction. Do you think that's more of a political motivation for that than anything else?
Well, I think the CHL is the primary feeder league for young talent to the NHL, and they're a partner with the NHL in a lot of ways. And they're also a business. Mm-hmm. And I think what from their standpoint, you're looking at taking their best players right. and putting them in the minors. And the question really is, it's a slippery slope, because what is too good? And, you know, is there any guarantee that putting them in the AHL is going to be a better experience for them than having them just play that other year of junior and dominating, you know, likely dominating play there? And, you know, what's better, 20 minutes and lots of power play and lots of points playing for an extra year in major junior or maybe struggling in the American League?
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Frank Provenzano. He's an ESPN insider for ESPN.com. Frank, last time there was a lockout and a new CBA, as soon as the ink was dry on the agreement, teams were looking for loopholes, and they were able to find some loopholes, as we saw with the different contracts that were being signed. Given your reading of the current CBA, do you see any loopholes in that one?
Yeah, well, first of all, anyone who actually reads the CBA cover to cover has some sort of masochistic streak.
I've got it on my Amazon Kindle right now, Frank.
Unfortunately, it's the picture book version because you can't read.
I think if you look at this season, the clearest change coming into this season was the cap going down. And I think there's half the league is on long-term injury mm-hmm. relief. The biggest change, I would say, if you're looking for, you know, a change in the CBA resulting in changes in how the league does business, is the ability to trade some money on the contracts. And I think that's probably what you're going to see initially as the biggest wrinkle that's going to have the biggest ripple effect, particularly with the cap going down. I think you've already seen it. Florida was able to get rid of Versteeg by picking up, I think, half the contract, right. which if that rule change wasn't there, I think Chris Versteeg would still be a Florida Panther.
Frank, you mentioned, you threw out the stat that Elliot Friedman was talking about how, you know, if a team is a certain amount of points behind a playoff spot, it's really tough for them to make it. And now that we're past the quarter mark of the season, after our interview with you, we're going to go over kind of our review of the first quarter of the season, but as far as the 20 game mark or the 25 game mark being a good barometer for what a team has, is that, like, do you subscribe to that theory, or do you think you really need a half season or more to really get a good gauge of what a team is all about?
I think you get a real good feel from a management perspective on what your team is by about Christmas time. Now, does that match up with standings-wise where your team is going to end up? Because you may have a poor start for a number of reasons, injury, or you just the performance quite isn't there, players aren't quite meshing with a system, et cetera, et cetera. And then the actual final 60 or 40 games, the team plays very well but still doesn't qualify for the playoffs, which, you know, most people view as a failure. But you can also make the wrong moves because you had a poor start. So I think, personally, you get a better sense of your team at about the Christmas, you know, about the 40-game mark than you do the 20-game mark.
Frank, you know, you're in the league for a long time with Washington and Dallas and Vancouver, so you've seen the landscape change a bit. Why do we see, I mean, we know the cap obviously is a factor and these long-term deals is a factor, but why do you think we see so few trades in this day and age?
Well, I think you see fewer trades because you're trading two components. You're trading the player, so you're trying to make a hockey trade, and then you're trading the money. And it's difficult to make those two components match. And then you add in the fact that a lot of players now, players of substance, that, you know, when you talk about trades, it's really you're talking about players that are going to make an impact. Mm-hmm. They have longer-term deals at higher dollar amounts, so it's a real big leap and a real big commitment to make. And a lot of players now have limitations in their contracts about trading, whether it's a full no-trade or a no-move or a partial. And so you add all those things up, sort of throw all those ingredients into the pot, and you get a stew that's a little bit sticky.
Well, you know, I guess getting on this last question here, second last question, Frank, the no-trade thing, when you're in a negotiation, and you've been in many of them, how important is that for some of the players? And are you, you know, can an organization get by in this day and age with having a policy of not including any no trades?
I think it's very difficult to just have a policy, a blanket statement that you're not going to have a no trade, mm-hmm. particularly if you want to be active in free agency. And the way I looked at a no trade clause is certainly, it was part of the negotiation. I think, you know, as a league, maybe we've been historically a little too willing to just sort of include them as part of the package. And typically in a negotiation, you know, the agent, once you're sort of down the road on term and dollars, et cetera, and structure of the contract, right. They'd say, okay, well, and it's going to have a no trade, right? And you'd be like, well, not really. I mean, that's a material part of the contract. So I always looked at it, if I was doing a contract for one of our own and he was willing to take a hometown discount, then I was more willing, if he's willing to buy into our program, and part of that, you know, we were experiencing, you know, we were bankrupt for 3 years, so guys really had to buy into the program to, you know, to want to stay with us because we had some financial restrictions. But if they're willing to take a hometown discount, I'm willing to be a little more flexible in allowing the player to control where he may or may not get moved if this contract doesn't work out. Because at the end of the day, to me, a no-trade or no-move clause, it's just about managing risk. If you are, I wanted to give my general manager the ability to be able to move his assets mm-hmm. if he needed to. And if you just hand out no-trade clauses or no-move clauses, you are limiting your GM down the road to deal with situations that you don't even know you have yet. And so that's how I looked at it. And if I was getting something from the player, whether it's, you know, maybe a little less than market value, if he was leaving some money on the table to stay with us, then I was willing to give him a little more ability to say, okay, well, if I do get moved, I want some control over where I'm going.
Frank Provenzano is an ESPN insider with ESPN.com. He's been a frequent guest on this program. Frank, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. I got to tell you, we've got some Winnipeg weather here. It's like 36 degrees. Everyone's panicking.
You want to trade? It's about 17 below Celsius here.
Everyone, when it gets cold here, they go and they empty the stores of everything white.
Yeah, I saw that tweet.
Frank, it's okay, though. We're going to have lots of time to read that CBA, so I'll tweet you once I've completed it.
You should burn it to keep you warm.
Thanks, Frank. Take care.
See you guys.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290, TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center, it's an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Now, gentlemen, anybody who was at Thursday's Winnipeg Jets game, notice the hot new Winnipeg couple. they're the it couple in Winnipeg on the Kiss Cam. And I was in my seat, so I wasn't involved with this, but I must salute both of you for arranging to get Mr. Michael Remus and hashtag Leah on the Kiss Cam. They're the first couple on the Kiss Cam.
Hashtag Leah.
Richie, can you, walk the, how did that occur?
I wish Remus were here to talk about this, but of course his car, when you try to come to the show at 10 o'clock, you don't realize your car doesn't start in minus 20 weather. And if you came to the show at 8 o'clock, you'd know that you need to get a boost to get here for 10.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So no foresight there. But, I mean, I thought Michael did a good job. I thought his form was good. I thought his reaction was good. I thought he leaned in. He had a nice kiss.
Church it was a very tongue. Chaste kiss, I thought.
I thought it was very classy. I thought he represented Legal Curve well. On the Kiss Cam, I thought... I was actually surprised he wasn't, eating a Klondike bar while that happened.
He did have popcorn in his hand, though.
He did have popcorn, yeah.
Well,
to be honest with you, I was just surprised. I didn't know Remus has ever kissed a girl. So I was really happy for him. No, it was funny. Basically, the way... Just to tell the quick story here. Basically, what happened is... Right before the game, Remus told us that he was going to be in his seats, but he wouldn't tell us where he was sitting. We knew he was sitting with Leah. And we had to call his brother and get his brother to pretend like he was at the game to get the section and seat number. And then we talked to the True North marketing and promotions, the people that are responsible for getting the Kiss Cam going. And then when he was on the Kiss Cam, he lost it and he told us to take the Twitter picture down. But it was by that point, it had already blown up.
Yeah.
Gary, Hustler, and Lawless were already all over it, and everybody once saw it.
I hear it was very popular. It was the talk of the station yesterday.
I heard that too.
That's what I understand. So not surprised. But there you go. There's finally the first public sighting for those of you who've always been curious as to who hashtag Leah is, and nobody cares who Remus looks like. So
he's boosting his car right now. I just got a text of him boosting his car.
Is it a picture of him boosting his car?
The cars are kissing, actually.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Similar to Remus and Leah.
That's beautiful. The
so
car for
why is he bothering to come?
You know what? We want to get effort.
Good effort. Going to come for 5 minutes?
Something like that. Yeah. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to look at the NHL through the quarter mark of the season, and talk about some of the surprises and disappointing teams and players. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This is Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day. Hustler and Lawless follow us. They're in Regina. I'll be down at Boston Pizza City Place. And then Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour starts at 1 o'clock on this fine station.
This is our new band.
Yes, I know.
Gaslight Anthem.
Yeah, I got it. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors and all next week, Dave Hempstead is going to be there. Tickets have been selling out like crazy, so you better get some on those. You can check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com or via phone, 204-488-4520. And also just announced for the new year, the Incredible Boris, February 4th to the February 8th.
He follows me on Twitter, by the way.
I'm sure he's not disappointed in the least bit with that decision.
We actually talked about you guys once. I talked to Boris about you. You guys have golfed before, haven't you?
Boris and I go way back.
Yeah. Serious.
So where were you and Boris during the JFK assassination?
You already asked that question earlier. And in March 6th to March 8th, concert series, Chris Kattan, Saturday Night Live alumni. Tickets are for sale currently for Chris Kattan, March 6th to March 8th at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Yep, Drew and Jack Ruby went to high school together.
Morons. We're a little bit past the quarter mark in the season right now, so we thought we'd look back and see how the season's evolved so far, talk about some of our most disappointing teams, most disappointing players, surprising players, things of that nature. Let's start with the players. So far, who's your best defenseman in the NHL this year?
I think the best defenseman in the National Hockey League this year has been Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
I like it.
And I think
a little off the board.
Yeah, but you have to watch him play. The guy logs 26 minutes a night. He is... Everything he does is just so smooth. He can put points up on the board. He plays against tough competition on the other side. He can move the puck. He can defend that team again, you know, always surprises people with their success. I think Oliver Ekman-Larsson has been the best defenseman in the NHL. You know, the mainstays, of course, you know, you're going to have your Chars and Webbers and guys like that, but I think he has been the best defenseman.
I think Richie, you know, makes a good point there, and I think when you look at Erik Karlsson and Chara, as Rich mentioned, as well as guys that you expect to be there, I think Ekman-Larsson deserves to be in that conversation. I'll take Ryan Suter as the best defenseman. We've seen him play now twice, and we'll see him for a third time this afternoon. Ryan Suter, and Zach Parise has been good too, but Ryan Suter to me is really the crown jewel of those two signings, because Ryan Suter will anchor that defense for the next 10 years, maybe even longer. And the guy is physical. He's got offensive upside. I don't think he's scored yet this year. Only has one goal, but he's more of a playmaker. But Ryan Suter is just unbelievable. You know, you mentioned Rich Ekman-Larsson's playing 26 minutes. Suter's playing almost 30 minutes a game, leading the NHL. And he just does everything right. And he's a guy that's going to be a huge part of the U.S. Olympic team. So for me, if we're picking, you know, the Norris Trophy after 25 games, I'll take Suter.
MVP, most valuable player.
Sidney Crosby. When Sidney Crosby plays, he's the best player in the NHL. Did you see the pass he made yesterday cross ice?
Yep, and then got the winning goal.
Did you see the goal? I mean, Sidney Crosby, if he's playing, is the best player in the NHL. And I don't care if Alexander Ovechkin scored 42 goals in his last 44 games, because when that game matters, Alexander Ovechkin and his team are going to turtle like they always do. So I have Sidney Crosby as the best player, and I don't think it's close. I mean, there's some great – Steven Stamkos, before the injury, was in that conversation, and I think he's a better all-around player than Ovechkin, but Sidney Crosby's better than both of them.
Yeah, I'm taking Crosby as well for a lot of the same reasons Richie is taking Crosby. Just got his 30th point. I mean, he's back to his – you know, he could get 120 points again this year and get more points than he has in a long time. But if he's healthy – and the Penguins are able to add a couple of players, I think they're Stanley Cup contenders again. But the way he's playing right now is unbelievable. It's fun to watch. It's great for hockey. And it's going to be really fun again, guys, to see him at the Olympics, because I think he's the best player in the world right now, and that's an advantage for Team Canada.
And he wasn't that good in Vancouver. He can be better.
Most surprising player so far this year?
Well, you know, we talked about him earlier in the show, guys, and I'm going to go back to Phoenix again. Marty Hanzel. Marty Hanzel plays against good players. He's big. He can defend. And he's got a point a game. Marty Hanzel has a point a game, guys. I think he's the most surprising player in the league. People don't talk a lot about him. He plays in Phoenix. Doesn't get a lot of attention. But you're putting up a point a game. And you're playing tough minutes. To me, that's the most surprising player in the league.
For me, most surprising player, there's a lot of guys that I was thinking of. Even a guy like Brian Little, because he's up there.
Yep.
I'm going to go Kyle Okposo. I really like Kyle Okposo, and I think if you look at his numbers in previous years, they've been decent. He's put up 20 goals in the NHL before, but this year now he's proving that he's not just a second line player. He can be a top line player, and he'll get a career year this year. And I really like the way he plays. He's a power forward, but he's just got a lot of talent, and he's starting to emerge. And they've had high hopes for him, and this year he's really starting to show that he is as good as the billing was.
On that point, too, you know, you talk about guys who don't necessarily carry over from the playoffs. You know, like Joel Ward has a huge playoff signs in Washington. This is the opposite case.
Yep.
Kyle Okposo didn't have a great season last year, carried the confidence of the playoff performance over into this season.
Yep.
No love for Alex Steen?
I just
he deserves a lot of credit, but
for surprising player?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been one of them for sure. I just think that the expectations for Steen are still like that 50 to 60 points, and he's been great. But like people talk a little bit more about Steen than they do about Hanzel. But I certainly can listen to that argument.
Best goalie.
See, this is an interesting one.
Yep.
Not that they aren't all interesting, but this one particularly interesting to me. And I think personally, and there's a couple guys, I think Kari Lehtinen when he's playing has been unreal.
Yep.
But I'm giving it to Jonathan Bernier. And the reason, I know he's played 15 games only. And he's only started 13 games. So that's an issue, and we'll see how it happens, what Andrew Carlisle does with his bench. But you play a goal in the National Hockey League, that's one thing. You play goal in the NHL for Toronto, that's another thing in terms of pressure.
Faces a lot of shots there.
And you play goal for the Toronto Maple Leafs, who give up a ton of shots, that's a third thing. To me, Jonathan Bernier wins that so far.
I think this one's a tough one, because I don't know if there's anybody like a Henrik Lundqvist who's really standing out. I'm going to go Josh Harding. I think I like his story so much.
Yeah, it's a good story.
I just love it. I think that I want to see the best for Josh Harding. I really do, because he was a backup year after year for Nicklas Backstrom. He's had the unfortunate diagnosis of MS, and right now his numbers are disgusting. Yeah. 939 save percentage, 1.48 goals against average. Night in and night out, he has been there for the Minnesota Wild, giving them a chance to win. So I'm going to say Vezina for Josh Harding at the quarter mark.
Yeah, that's all we're talking about is the quarter mark. Best coach,
Patrick Waugh. Come on,
it's tough to argue against that, Rich.
He's taken that team, changed them around, changed their dynamic, changed the way they play, changed their confidence level. To me, it's hands down, no question about it.
I'm going to say Waugh as well, because right off the bat, the Avalanche started off, what was it, 8-1, and they have just completely turned their fortunes around. He's getting, you know, and Francois Allaire deserves some credit for that, the goaltending coach there. But he the goaltending's better, and obviously there's the Varlamov situation. But as far as what he's done there, the team is just playing so well. They're a contender now in the Western Conference. And, yeah, as Richie mentioned, the way he's turned the team around, I think, is just incredible. So I'll give it to Waugh.
Last one regarding individual players, the best rookie so far this season.
A tough one.
Because Hurdle's faded a little bit.
Into most disappointing, Drew.
Oh, I'm sorry. One. You're right.
Well, I'm going to say Drew's the most disappointing.
Well, that's obvious.
Yeah. Week in and week out, I'm consistently the most disappointing.
Yeah. Rookie, I'm going to say, and this is a tough one. I was thinking about this quite a bit. Rookie, I'm going to say Torrey Krug.
Okay.
Because I really think that, you know, a guy who stepped in last year in the playoffs, and, you know, it's so hard. There haven't, to me, been any standout rookies. I know Hertl's obviously been good. He plays with great players, though. Right. There's really no pressure there.
And he got a lot of those points in one game.
Yeah, well, how good he is. He's talented, don't get me wrong, but he plays with good players. They're so stacked the way they play. He's been great. He's in the conversation. He's nominated, as far as I'm concerned. But you come in as a rookie, and you play, you basically take Andrew Ferentz's spot. You play 17-plus minutes in the NHL. And you were playing in a defensive system with lots of pressure, and you're counted on to move the puck. Torrey Krug, to me, has been the best rookie this year.
I think that's a good pick, and you know, Hurdle's leading all rookies in points, and McKinnon has struggled a little bit, but he's playing third line center. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Sean Monahan. Yep. Sean Monahan got the shootout winner for the Flames against the Jets, but the guy has come into camp, and Bob Hartley said he was in really good shape, and we talked to Jay Feaster about Sean Monahan as well. But he's just been incredible. Wasn't supposed to make the team. He's doing excellent. He's got 14 points on a Flames team that isn't blessed with God-given talent. And I think, you know, everyone in Calgary is not really, you know, happy these days about the team, because they most likely won't make the playoffs. But you look at, like, what's to get excited about the future? And Monahan is a guy that could be the future leader of this team.
And, as our friend Ken, we've just texted, you know, Seth Jones likely... He's a guy you can't disregard. Certainly going to be probably a favorite for the award. I just like what...
Also might make the U.S. Olympic team.
I guess we're taking texts now.
We're taking texts.
Most disappointing player.
To me, the most disappointing player is Jonathan Huberdeau. And watching him play and him having the season he had last year and the accolades that went with that, and the talent level that he has on a team that lacks scoring, I've been surprised that, you know, there's a sophomore slump and all that jazz, but I've been surprised that the guy's put up 11 points. And if you watch some of his games when he scores some pretty goals, and he's got a lot of talent, but I've been surprised at his performance thus far. He's disappointed for me.
Okay, this one's easy. Claude Giroux.
Yeah.
He's the most disappointing player. Didn't score a goal until his 18th game or whatever. And there's other guys on the Philadelphia Flyers you could point out. Jakub Voracek has been very disappointing after having a really good season during the lockout year. But Claude Giroux, to me, that team goes the way Claude Giroux goes. And he's been playing better as of late. We got to give him credit. But he started off the season and he was coming off an injury, that freak accident injury that he had. But early on in the season, he just wasn't there for the Flyers, and Voracek wasn't there, and then they had injury problems. But for me, Giroux, after 20 games, he's been pretty disappointing.
Most disappointing team. We have to go a little bit quicker now.
Well, I mean, the Oilers are the most disappointing team, Drew, because they're done. And they had too much talent to be done this early. No question.
Yeah, Oilers are disappointing. I think the Flyers have been disappointing. And I think the Rangers have been disappointing. I'm going to go Rangers. And they've started to play better as of late. But I was really expecting this team, you know, now that they're free from the shackles of John Tortorella's negativity and defensive smothering, shot blocking, whatever. I was expecting more out of the Rangers, and they've had some injury problems too, but their defense hasn't been good. Delzato has been a disappointment. He's been rumored to be you know, on the trading block.
You know, doesn't like him.
The Rangers have tons of talent there. Still have an excellent defense with McDonough and Girardi and Staal, and as we've mentioned, Lundqvist is still a great goaltender. So for me, the Rangers have been disappointing, but Flyers are a close second.
Best team?
Well, I got to say, I mean, I think, and I went a little bit back and forth on this one, but to me, the best team is Chicago. I mean, you defending cup champs, look focused still. I like Joel Quenneville's job there. They don't look like a team that's, you know, we'll wait till the season kicks in gear later on. I think maybe the Western Conference helps there, because I think the Bruins look good too.
Sure.
There's some other teams at San Jose, obviously, but Chicago handed San Jose a pretty pretty big defeat there. But last week, so I'm going to Chicago.
You have to think, Richie, too, that the Blackhawks learned their lesson. Guys like Taves Kane, Keith Seabrook in 2009, because they didn't repeat, and they didn't have the best, you know, follow up to their first cup. But now that they've won their second cup, I think they know that this is a special team. This is a team that could win three or four cups, right? Like, they're that good.
It is.
And it's hard to argue against Chicago. To me, the two best teams in the league are Chicago and Pittsburgh. So I'll go with Chicago. But I think if Pittsburgh can add a few pieces, I think they'll give Chicago a run for their money in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Most overachieving team?
Overachieving team, Tampa. I think right now Steven Stamkos is injured, and you're starting to see them fall down the standings a little bit. You know, Ben Bishop has been very good, and the defense still, I think, is not a defense. You know, Sammy Salo's older. Hedman still coughs up the puck and makes rookie mistakes, and he's been in the league for, what, 5 years now? So I'll say Tampa.
Now, Toronto, obviously, their shots is the one, but Washington, to me, is a fraud. So, you know, that division's terrible, but Washington, to me, is a big game. They're not going to be anywhere.
Richie, the Southeast division didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
This is sort of tied to the previous one. The team most likely to regress throughout the rest of the year.
Regress? Well, you're regressing throughout the segment, Drew. But as far as teams regressing, I guess it's going to go hand in hand. I'll say Tampa as well, because I think it's going to be tough to not have a guy, a 60 goal guy in your lineup. So I'll go Tampa.
Toronto, to me, it's tough, and I know the style of play, they, you know, certainly is a factor in the goaltending they've had, but it's going to be tough to have that incredible goaltending throughout. So I'd say Toronto, but I still like the core that they have there.
Last question, the Stanley Cup favorite. Your Stanley Cup favorite?
Well, I mean, my prediction at the beginning of the season was Boston San Jose final. I think Chicago.
I still like that though.
I think Chicago's a better team than San Jose, but I'm going to stick with the prediction. We're only 25%.
Yeah, and I took Pittsburgh, so okay. I'm sticking with Pittsburgh. Drew, Marc-Andre Fleury, by the way, has been lights out this year.
Drew, your Oilers Panthers prediction for the finals is looking pretty bad.
Yeah, it went out a bit out on a limb there, and it's looking like it's biting me in the backside a little bit.
Is that who you actually took?
No.
Oh.
Before we go to break tomorrow during the Grey Cup, there's going to be a very big announcement. CTV is making a big announcement during the Grey Cup tomorrow. All I can say is that, ladies and gentlemen, I need to have your attention. I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
I don't get it.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, I said it ain't written in the sky, but well, the fortune teller told me.
Songs for Remus.
You gotta tell her that you're good.
Hey, hold on. Let it play.
You need around Global Girl, great big kiss. All right, Global Girl, great big kiss.
Give a girl a great big kiss.
Little Bruce Springsteen, as it always is, to wrap up the show on this.
Remus shows up with 10 minutes left.
I know. I'm not sure why exactly, but that's okay. We'll deal with that later off air. Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our friend. He's an author of the book is called Got 'em, Need 'em, A Fan's Guide to Collecting the Top 100 Sports Cards of All Time. John Waldman. John, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Very well, thank you. John, got a couple minutes before we got to get out for H&L here this morning. You recently wrote an article for Beckett about Timu Selanne and how he is one of the most in-demand players on trade lists. Why, and you know that being trading of collectibles. You know, why is Selanne so popular among collectors?
You know, it's really a couple of factors. I mean, first of all, obviously being that he started his career in Winnipeg. There's a loyal following from here. The way that he started his career with the 76 goals, 132 points was a huge factor. But that he was able to sustain it and really become a superstar here, along with in the U.S., really started to build him up as he approached the Rocket Richard trophies, started to get into those conversations about the Hart Trophy, etc. Along with that, you've got a great international presence because he's always been so closely tied to Finland. The current record holder for all-time points in the Olympics, everything that he's done with the team there and maintained such a close tie to his native land, it just made him such a popular figure overseas.
John, this year is actually interesting. It's what's called the double rookie class because of the lockout last year, the PA didn't allow last year's rookie class to be in sets, which is interesting, obviously one of the other repercussions of the lockout. What does that mean for collectors?
What that's meant for collectors this year is that basically you're getting a double cohort, similar to what we saw in 05-06, where you had Ovechkin and Crosby in the same year, when in theory they should have been separate, with Ovechkin theoretically debuting in 04-05. So what you're getting is Yakupov coming in, Jonathan Huberdeau, along with the guys like McKinnon, Seth Jones, etc., who you guys were talking about in last segment. So really, you know, this is a boom year. The Toronto Expo, one of the major shows for hockey, especially here in Canada, just happened a couple weeks ago, and the big word around was about the new sets that were being done by Upper Deck and Panini, especially, that really gave the first rookie cards of both of those guys.
John, we don't have a lot of time here, but I wanted to ask you, we're all around the same age, and we all remember collecting hockey cards and all of that, and you know, you're obviously someone who writes for Beckett and you follow it now at our age. How have hockey cards changed the most from when we were younger, and where do you see this hobby going?
You know, it's changed in so many ways. I mean, obviously, it's not the same days when we would go down to Niagara Drugs or something like that, and you would put down a quarter or something like that, and you'd get a pack of cards and a stick of gum out of it. The gum pretty much has disappeared, except for maybe one or two Kitsch products that come out a year. It's now a lot more focused on things like autographs coming out of packs, swatches from game-used jerseys, sticks, pucks, what have you, being embedded into cards. There's definitely, obviously, a lot more value is being put into it. When you think back to the 80s, that was a time when it was still a very innocent hobby, and you know, we would put cards in our bike spokes, or we would, you know, bat them around on a tabletop game or something like that. But now it really is that treasured piece where something can hold a certain monetary value. It's not as populated as it was in the boom era during the early 90s, but now you're seeing a lot of focus collectors, a lot more of that guy who's willing to plunk down, you know, $400 or $500 for a single pack of cards versus something that would have been unheard of when we were kids. And you're also seeing a little bit more of the diversity. In fairness, all the companies are still doing things like the cheaper sets, like an OPG, some of the ones that we grew up with. Panini's still doing their stickers, so you're still getting that balance towards the younger collector to bring them in, but at the same time, you are catering really to all those demographics, to the guys who, you know, have those warm fuzzies for the cards that we grew up with, for the guys who are the investors, for guys who are, you know, maybe oriented more towards a particular team. You're seeing things like a Toronto Maple Leaf set or a Detroit Red Wings set, for example.
John Waldman is the author of Got 'Em, Need 'Em, and he's the author of the forthcoming book, He Shoots, He Saves. John, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Wow, that flew by. It's already almost 11 a.m., and that's it for us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next from Regina. I'll be down at Boston Pizza City Place. Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour at 1 o'clock here. This is Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. Big thank you to John Waldman. You just heard from him. Big thank you to Frank Provenzano from ESPN.com. Big thank you to Bob Duff from the Windsor Star, and a big thank you to Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also download the show on tsn1290.ca. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Tim, I'm your host Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.